The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, thank you for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host today, Erin Fairbanks, and you've tuned in to another of our community sessions. We are in the studio today with Nancy Liao of Zoe's Premium.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. So, Nancy,
great to be here.
You are a dog food maker.
I am. Sexy, right?
You know, it's trending. It's trending. Well, I want to talk a little bit about how you kind of got into the dog food making world. What was the kind of start of the process for you guys?
Well, I got a dog, and I've, you know, lived with dogs. I had dogs growing up, large dogs, and I got a dog right when I finished up with graduate school, and we were, you know, very excited. And I noticed that she started, you know, getting some, you know, some red spots and irritations on her skin. And I thought, you know, it's no big deal. I'll take her to the vet when I have time. I would take her to the vet. The vet would say, no problem. We'll put her on antibiotics. The second time it was, it's really not an issue. This is just a simple case of pyoderma. We'll put her on steroids and she'll be fine. And, you know, I was a busy lady. I was an architect and, you know, we were in the office long hours. And, you know, having to take time off of work, take her in, see that she was obviously suffering and uncomfortable, you know, it made me start thinking a little bit deeper and probing into what I could do to help alleviate her symptoms, or what can I do to help her? You know, there are family members, and when they're uncomfortable, it's hard to watch. So I started looking into it and getting really serious about it. And it was unintentional. I was always just the crazy dog girl around the block, mm-hmm. in the neighborhood. And, you know, what I did for a living and what I did for my dog were two separate things, you know. So
how do you make the jump from, I mean, you're like, okay, obviously, like, you are, you know, feeding your dog, you're taking her, him or her?
Zoe.
So you're taking her to the vet. You're like not really satisfied with the results or with the answers.
Yep.
You decide, okay, I'm going to take matters into my own time. And if I'm you, I'm like, all right, I go on Google and I'm like, dog food skin rash problem.
Yeah.
Great. How do you go from like that to kind of coming up with a solution and starting mm-hmm. to try things out? Because it's a weird to experiment yeah. on your own pet, essentially.
Absolutely. You know, there's a lot of information out there. I started some, you know, great resources. A guy named Dr. Richard Pitcairn. He has a book called Natural Health for Cats and Dogs. There's another great holistic veterinarian. His name is Martin Goldstein, and his book is The Nature of Animal Healing. And those books really helped me, helped kickstart and inspire me to find answers in everyday foods.
And so I know, you know, I always think about pet owners a lot like new parents, where you're it's strangely like this very susceptible consumer, in that like you want to mm-hmm. do right by your child, you want to do right by your animal.
Yes.
You're not an expert in the care of those
right.
things.
Right.
And you know, you're seeing the ads on TV for, you know, Purina or Pupper Chow, and there's like the beautiful dog running.
Yes.
And it's like, if you really care about your animal, you do these things.
Yes.
And that's a lot to kind of combat, essentially.
Yeah.
And to trust your own instincts, especially if you're not a professional. So it sounds like you went out, you educated yourself, and then you got in the kitchen.
Yes, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of information out there. You know, you can take it for what it's worth. There's a lot going on. I chose to home cook, which is what, you know, that's sort of the official industry term for what I do, which is cooked, prepared, complete meals in a pouch for, you know, dogs and soon to be cats. There's a lot of information out there, and it's kind of what I hear new mothers and fathers saying, you know, that they just have to trust their instincts, go by what they know. And then a lot of it's just sometimes very conservative trial and error. And, you know, we found these formulas just by me trying to up the level of what I could do for my dog. Yeah, sure, fresh chicken is great for her, you know, if she's not allergic to chicken, which she is not. But what else can I do for her other than giving her this chicken? What can I add to her meal so that I can ensure that she's getting everything that she needs to thrive? So that's kind of how it started.
So you came up with a couple of formulas that worked for your pet.
Yeah.
So how do you make the jump from that to, I mean, were you just like the dog food lady? You're going around giving out, you know, pouches for other people to try? I mean, how do you go from that to being like in grocery stores all around the Northeast?
Right. Well, you know, you do have to go through some testing. You know, you have to, if you're making claims that you're not a doggy treat, so to speak, and that you're a food, and if you're making claims that you're complete and balanced, there is a lot of testing that goes involved with that, just to make sure that, you know, you are satisfying the needs of dogs based on certain guidelines. So that does happen, and that has to happen for me to be able to put any kind of dog food on the market.
So, oh, really? So yeah. How regulated is that process? I mean, who and who regulates you? Who did you have to go through?
Definitely New York State. But unfortunately, there really isn't a regulatory process. So this is something that is, the onus is on each of these dog manufacturers or pet food manufacturers to make sure that they are satisfying, one, the claims that they make, and also that they're nutritionally hitting all the levels that they need to make sure that dogs don't develop deficiencies along the line.
So essentially, it's like a on the consumers to kind of keep, you know, I mean, so like if they're not doing what they say they're doing, eventually the assumption is they'd go out of business or...
You know... Consumers, especially pet owners, you know, they're not fools. They really, the bar has been raised very high for dog food manufacturers, pet food manufacturers in general, to up the quality, to be transparent about their sources, and to make sure that they're knowledgeable enough to put a product out there that consumers feel they can trust to feed their animals. So
how much dog food are you guys producing?
Well, we are still a small, you know, a small food manufacturer. We do make in small batches, and I guess it sounds scary, and it sounds massive, but we really only make 350-pound batches at a time, which is pretty small, you know, compared to a lot of the bigger manufacturers out there who utilize co-packers. You know, they make upwards of 10,000 pounds of food at a time. So we're still teeny weeny in that sense. So.
And is the plan to stay kind of in that range, or how much do you want to grow?
We definitely want to grow. I still feel like, you know, we have a lot of dogs out there, not only in the New York area, but everywhere. You know, I'd like to help other dog owners who have been through the frustration of trying to find something that alleviates their dog's allergies or, you know, or poor health. And I think we have a lot to do. We have a lot to grow. I think we still have a lot to say and share about dog nutrition.
And you guys, if I read correctly, you're producing the dog food in Bed-Stuy?
Yeah.
So that's my neighborhood, Bed-Stuy. I'm proud of it. How did you end up in Bed-Stuy?
Well, you know, we produce in a commercial human grade facility, which is also a differentiating factor between us and other pet food manufacturers out there. We do produce using all the guidelines and restrictions of human food prep. And we started out in Sunset Park and... Now we're in Bed-Stuy, in both areas we are the only pet food makers in that kitchen. So
the kitchen is shared with other users?
Yes, it is.
Okay, interesting. So like you have to make sure.
You got to be really organized. You know, especially in a shared situation. You know, you have to make sure all of your inventory is in place, all of your helpers are there, and understand what's going on. It's a real production. And 350 pounds seems, you know, small, but for us, it's still, you know, every time we do it, we're done. We made a beautiful formula. Today is turkey cassoulet, let's say. Actually, tomorrow is chicken and sweet potatoes. But, you know, we high five each other. It's hard work. It's a responsibility that we take really seriously. So,
speaking of some of those, the kind of meal options, you mentioned the turkey cassoulet, the chicken and sweet potato.
Yes.
How did you land on those? I mean, I know on some of your information, it says you guys definitely are careful not to use any animal byproducts or be hormone or antibiotic free. And, you know, I didn't notice anything that you did with beef or pork or did I just miss that? Or?
Oh no, we have a steak and lentils formula.
Okay, that's nice.
And no, we don't use pork products. Most dogs tend not to do too well on pork. It is a great alternative for people whose dogs are allergic to poultry proteins or even conventional beef. A lot of times people will turn to pork, but it's not really considered something that's very appropriate for canine digestive systems.
And where are you sourcing the proteins from?
We love Los Paisanos. We use antibiotic-free and hormone-free meats and Los Paisanos on Smith Street. We have a great relationship with them, and we get our meats directly from them.
And how do you buy it?
Well, we use, first of all, we use Plainsville turkey thighs, and we use boneless, skinless. We don't really need, turkey thigh has enough good fat content and protein content, so we don't use skins of any animal. So we use Murray's chicken. We use leg quarters and chicken breasts. And then for our steak and lentils formula, we use what is called the bottom round flat, which is the brisket cut.
Okay.
With the fat cap removed and trimmed off. So, you know, all of the meat that we use, we take special care to trim it off. You know, we want to make sure that our fat content isn't too rich, and that's something that we keep track of.
And then you guys package and freeze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why the freezing as opposed to another kind of, you know, canning or...
Yep. Well, with the canning process, which is very convenient, they have to fire up the product pretty hard, and you lose a lot of nutrients that way. So we do call ourselves a slow-cooked product, but we actually, after the cooking process, there's really not a lot of fiddling around we do with the product. We really don't want the food to have to do a lot of backflips. We call ourselves minimally processed, so no dehydrating, no canning. Once it's made, we mix in some extra ingredients, and then it gets packaged right away in the cold form, because we don't want to use preservatives, and that's something that I feel really strongly about. But at the same time, we don't also want to fire up the food too hard. So it is a cooked product, but not... what we always say is you don't want to kill it twice. So,
got it. So, I'm thinking when you say fire it up too hard, like there's probably some production methods that they cook it at such a high temperature as to ensure
sterilization.
Yes.
And exactly.
And because you guys are using kind of a higher quality of starting ingredients, I think there's probably less of a need to do that.
But absolutely.
Also, sounds like maybe some nutrient concerns with regards to a higher cooking temperature, or not really?
It depends on which ingredients you're talking about, but for all of our ingredients that all of our raw ingredients are cooked, so we don't mix anything raw except for our organic raw apple cider vinegar and organic raw honey, and that comes after the cooking process. But yes, we fire things up, and we do have to let it rip, so to speak, at a boil for quite a while, because we do, like I was saying, we do follow those standards for human food prep. So
I was surprised to see honey and apple cider vinegar on the ingredient list. So why include those?
Well, raw apple cider vinegar is fantastic for humans and beasts alike. It maintains the acid and alkaline balance of the digestive tract, and it can help alleviate food and environmental allergies, which we try to do with all of our formulas, is to use the highest quality ingredients, but at the same time help those dogs out there who are having some issues with their skin or their health or digestive tract. It's also a natural remedy for arthritis. So those larger dogs out there, we're thinking of you.
Well, we are going to move to just a short break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what the salt costs. So hang tight. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. We are in studio with Nancy Lau of Zoe's Premium Dog Foods.
You're listening to a selection of songs from TaxStar on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Thank you. Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
All right. Thank you for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to a community session. We're in the studio with Nancy Lau of Zoe's Premium Dog Food. So we were talking about some of the delicious sounding dog foods. I'm sure they're delicious tasting. Full disclosure, I have not had them. The turkey cassoulet, chicken and sweet potato. And, you know, obviously you guys are using, you know, producing in a human grade facility using human grade ingredients. So how much are we paying for these dog foods, and how did you guys kind of factor both the cost of production but also the cost to consumers into your product decision making sourcing?
You know, apart from the formulations, that's a really big deal, how we present it to our consumers and our dog and cat owners out there. We sell in a 7-ounce individual package, and each one of those packages usually retails for around anywhere between $3.99 to $4.29, depending on the retailer. And each one of those pouches feeds a 40-pound dog for one meal, so it is more nutritionally dense than a canned product. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, man, that's like a mighty small package. But actually, you know, because we use the ingredients that we use, there aren't any fillers in there. You'll get, I hope this isn't TMI, you'll get less poop, and you'll get better quality. And
that is important for dog owners. They want to talk about the poop, the consistency, the frequency.
I know for us, we're pretty unabashed about talking about stool. But, you know, the big thing is that with the quality of ingredients that we use and the density of our product, you just don't really need to feed as much. So, and overfeeding definitely is a big issue, you know, not just with dogs in the city who don't have backyards or whatever. It's a problem. It's, you know, it's epidemic in the United States with overfeeding dogs with both food and treats. So
yeah, you mentioned that before, the kind of different, you fall under kind of a different responsibilities with regards to I don't know, backing up your product if you're a treat versus a food. So can you talk a little bit about what that difference is?
Well, with treats, they're not, you know, they're not having to, they don't have the responsibility of any nutritional requirements, which if you make a food, you indeed are very responsible. You are, the buck stops with you. So with treats, people, you know, if they say we have glucosamine in our product, there's really no standard or way to evaluate, you know, the benefits or how much is in there or what is a therapeutic level. So, except with food, there are certain, you know, numbers we do have to hit with our food. So,
and so, you know, looking at the kind of cost issue and also thinking about the food stream more generally, you know, we as a country consume so much poultry, you know, beef, pork, and there are, you know, you make the claim that you're using no animal byproducts. And, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, a dog or a cat in nature and what they would and wouldn't eat. From, you know, a carcass of an animal.
Right.
And so how do you kind of make those distinctions for what is right to include and not to include? And I ask this because I just am kind of wondering, like, what should we do with the animal byproducts that we're creating? You know, if not diverting them to pet food, you know, where would be like an alternative source?
Right.
Well, any thoughts?
Sure. Definitely. Well, let me just start by saying there's this new trend now with people feeling that dogs are really just wolves in cuter, fuzzier clothing. But honestly, you know, our position with dogs is that they're more like cousins to the wolf. They're not, I wouldn't say that they're long-lost brothers. So the fact that a lot of dogs now are eating on what they call the prey model, which is mostly meats or mostly raw meaty bones, which I think is raw meaty bones, that is, are fantastic. But I don't always believe that dogs and cats do really well eating a lot of these metabolizing organs like the kidneys and the liver. They are cheaper. They are technically byproducts. And it would definitely drive our costs down. But, you know, if metabolizing organs are doing what they're doing, they really are filtering out toxins. And I really, if you look at a wolf, let's say, a wolf might eat once every 2 or 3 days or whenever. They're opportunists, so they'll catch what they can catch, but they might not eat again for another 2 or 3 days. They also live shorter lives. You know, they have intense lives where they have to deal with harsh weather and climate conditions, and their lives are, in general, very unpredictable. Our beasts, you know, who most of them probably, you know, for all you listeners out there probably know what I mean, but they sit on our couch. They watch movies with us on Friday night. You know, we take them out 3-4 times a day. We take them to the dog park. They socialize in a very different way than wolves do. They are by nature, yes, still pack animals, but 33,000 years ago, or maybe anywhere between 15 to 33,000 years ago, they chose, or we chose. Either way, there is an element of domestication in a dog that doesn't exist in the wolf. And so it's true, there is an issue of what to do with byproducts. I think hearts are technically byproducts, but fantastic for dogs. Now they're esophageal treats. You know, I mean, there are fantastic ways of feeding dogs animal byproducts. I just don't feel, you know, that is too broad of a definition for us to really include in our food and still maintain the responsibility and high level, high quality of product that, that we produce day in and day out. There is, I know a lot of pet owners out there know about this concept of not feeding our animals the 3 Ds, the dead, the diseased, and the dying. So it's really important that we make a distinction all the time between what we think of as animal byproducts and also in what we can and should or shouldn't feed our companion animals based on what we believe them to be. And I just don't see dogs really being wolves the way I sometimes do, kind of sometimes see cats as baby lions.
So. Well, if folks are interested, where can they find your foods? How can they? I mean, you guys have the website, zoespremium.com. But what are, where else can people get?
Well, let's see. We just recently started being available at Brooklyn Fair. So we're on top of the meat counter at Brooklyn Fair. We're at the Park Slope Food Co-op. We're at the Green Hill Food Co-op. And we are also pretty much at most of your independent local pet stores, pet food supply stores.
Nice. And I'm curious, were you the one who kind of went out kind of knocking on doors with your like baggie of pet food to say,
oh,
like,
gosh,
hey, you guys should carry this? I mean, what?
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that's a competitive market. So,
it sure is.
I mean, well, can you tell us maybe what some of those questions and conversations were that were allowed you to kind of set yourself apart from other people kind of coming into the shop with the like, hey, I made this thing, you should sell it.
Yeah. Oh, first of all, we're a food. So that's sort of a big distinction. Most people out there right now are starting treat companies, and I'm happy to see it because, man, those treats that we used to give our dogs when we were kids, it's just, it's not right. So I'm happy to see great quality pet treats coming out. But first of all, we're a food. And secondly, we keep the convenience of those busy pet owners out there in mind. So that's why we individually package in our 7-ounce units. Because, look, I mean, I was busy myself. My husband and I lead really busy lives. And sometimes it's really great not to have to worry about what we eat. That's why we order Thai food, you know, on a random Tuesday night. But for our dogs, you know, they don't always have the choices that we do. So having food readily available that I can just directly take out of the freezer, put into just boiled water and scoop out and feed her and know that she's eating well is important to me, as I know it is for other pet owners out there. So.
And is the plan that someone would feed their dogs like 100% on your food?
We take a pretty moderate and flexible approach. Of course, I'd like them to, and they sure absolutely can. So please do consider that an option. But, you know, we do take a pretty, you know, flexible approach to feeding dogs. I think, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, people were feeding really terrible things to their dogs without knowing it. Nowadays, everyone, you know, there's a lot of people in the raw dog food movement who really believe in feeding their dogs maybe closer to the prey model of feeding. And so we take that middle ground where we're thinking, you know, hey, if you make a mean butternut squash soup and you're cutting up that butternut squash, and as long as, you know, you haven't introduced onions into your recipe, you know, set some aside for your dog that night. If you guys got some great cage-free organic eggs at the farmer's market and you guys are going to start making something for dinner or for breakfast, you know, make an egg for your dog, or, you know, you got some great, beautiful olive oil, you know, put a few drops into your dog's food when you can. So it's really, for us, the principle is not Zoe's Premium is the best, which it is, but the principle is that
your feet, of course,
is that
we
your
take
feet,
a middle way.
We do. And, you know, that raw meaty bone is great if you have a dog that doesn't have a powerful jaw, because obviously some dogs like my pit mix, Zoe, they have these monster jaws, and their enthusiasm kind of, they're no match for their teeth. So, you know, there are certain ways of feeding that I think, you know, you can be flexible, use your judgment, and they're worth it.
And so just kind of some quick, maybe like three to five kind of do's and don'ts for things that we shouldn't feed our dogs. I mean, you just mentioned like onions. So if I'm at home, are there some kind of simple rules I can follow? Like these vegetables or starches are cool, but I don't want to add, you know, you said olive oil. I would have thought, oil probably wouldn't be good for my dog.
Right.
But so maybe just some quick tips for folks who might want to supplement their Zoe's diet.
Oh, sure. So, you know, you can use all sorts of great product, great raw foods out there, raw ingredients. Either cooked or raw is great for them. Cantaloupe is a good one. Broccoli, zucchini. There's a lot of great vegetables out there. If even some high quality whole grains are fantastic as well. So, you know, if you're making barley risotto, you know, definitely, as long as there's no onions in it. But no onions, no grapes. No artificial no products that have xylitol in it. So a lot of times dogs will jump on the counter and grab, you know, gum because it smells good. So definitely no xylitol for them. It remains to be seen whether or not avocados are safe for dogs. So I probably wouldn't give my dog any avocado. Olive oil is great. I would also, you know, if you have coconut oil, which is a big trendy thing right now, those medium chain fatty acids that are good for you are good for your beast. Spirulina, barley grass, any of those things that you're like, dang, I gotta
eat a little of that.
You know, a lot of the times are also fantastic for your dog.
Interesting. So again, I think kind of drawing some parallels to feeding your child, or kind of, you know, making some kind of thoughtful considerations and building it into your life and lifestyle in a way that doesn't, you know, create this whole separate, it sounds like, you know, you're really advocating, you don't need to create a whole separate thing.
No.
You know, you can kind of include that home cooked meal for your dog as a version of what you would cook for yourself.
Oh yeah, I mean, we think of it not as table scraps really, it's real food. So it's not that, I don't feed my dog any, you know, people food. But we don't really think of it as people food. We think of it as real, nutrient-rich, quality, unprocessed foods. So, you know, our biggest tenet is variety.
Got it. And so just quickly, because we're about out of time, what is the future for Zoe's Premium? You know, 5 years down the road, what should we be looking to see?
We're definitely going to be, you know, all across the United States. We have a regional distributor, and we're working on distribution into the Midwest and also the West Coast. We're working on our fifth canine formula, and we are launching our chicken and sweet potatoes feline formula in the next month or so. So
awesome.
Be on the lookout, guys.
Great. Well, Nancy, thanks so much for joining us in the studio
Aaron.
Today. So if you want to find more or find out where you can get some of the delicious pet food that we've been talking about, definitely check them out, www.zoespremium.com. This, like all 30 of our weekly shows, is available as a free download through iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Smart Radio or visit the website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you like what you hear, we hope you'll consider becoming a supporter by clicking that donate tab and becoming a member today. Thank you so much for tuning in, and keep coming back for more.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.